to Mexico with some friends of his and got back to Chicago at 2 o'clock in the morning. But the car just gave up its life. So he jumped the car to get money for food. Then he got on the telephone and he called the house. I was in Rockford, it's about 80 miles from Chicago. And he got his younger brother, who was only about 12 years old at that time. And he told him to go to Roy Coat and steal the keys and to get to the car, drive it out and drive it to Chicago. So my 12-year-old son did not realize that he was violating the law by driving through town after town after town without a license. But he managed to succeed in driving that car out of the my garage, getting into it, getting it started, and driving out. And you see, in Rockford, every house had a garage in the back. They had horses, and there was an alleyway. And he drove down the alleyway, drove out, and proceeded to deliver the car to Chicago. But my son, my number one boy, always wanted to outdo me. So he was messing with my car once, and I caught him at it, and I started to yell at him, and he started to run away, and I chased him. And after a short distance, I gave up, and he boasted for a week that he had outrun me. Actually, I was a very fast runner, and I was on the track team in high school, in elementary school. And I used to run the 100-yard dash in about 10 seconds, which was quite a feat for a boy who was 10 or 12 years old.
Yes.
Now, this is the reprint that she was looking to get, and I want to give you a copy and take it with you.
All right.
She tried to find to help me find this reprint. Well, I got the reprint. I had copies made by Ginkgo Kinko, so that you could take them with you and read. And then I was interviewed by when I was about 65 years of age, I was interviewed by a fellow from the American Chemical Society. All the time, I was a chemist first, the clinical chemist second. And he found out that I had made rounds with Benjamin Kramer. And that's how I got into the role and became a clinical chemist. Now, finally, I was visited by Willie Faulkner, and he stayed with me for a couple of days and figured out exactly what I was doing, and he wrote this article. So with these three articles, you got a copy of this? You ought to be able to write my history without me telling you.
But we want to have you tell us things that we would not find in these documents. We are very glad to have these documents to as resource material and as backup material, but we would like to typically record your recollection.
24 hours a day, and it's very easy to go there and have something copied in.
Yes.
And a nice top put on and bound in such a way that the article becomes... Recently, I visited brother-in-law of mine who was dying from a peritoneal sarcoma. Peritoneal sarcoma is a growth of cells in the peritoneal cavity. And I was on the road to solving that problem when I was interrupted by my son, whom I call the rat-faced boy. My oldest son, when he was 4 or 5 or 6 years old, he took some nails, hammered them into a windowsill, and put the hammer in the hands of his younger brother, and said, "Look what Ethan did." And of course, I knew immediately that he had done it. Ethan didn't have the power to hammer nails into a window. But he's, what would you call a person who has a, you would call it sibling rivalry, yeah, with his brother, but with his father. He's not a sibling of the father's father.
No.
Sam, you interested, you piqued my curiosity. When you were at Brooklyn Jewish Hospital,
yes,
you were there a reasonable amount of time. During that time, were you doing both jobs, high school teaching and as
That's
a
right. I would leave my high school job and go to the hospital and work at the hospital. And there I met this guy, J. Benjamin Kramer. And he took me by the hand and led me up to the floors and had me go from bed to bed to tell me what's wrong with this. An example, I took the blood of a woman who was suffering from hyperemesis gravidarum, you know. These women, they vomit like their guts out when they become pregnant. She had a very low potassium, so we tried to treat her with salt cubes, you know, that made from meat. But she didn't respond, and I analyzed the cubes and found there was no potassium in them. They had faked it. That was Bovril, B-O-V-R-I-L. So I took some meat, and I boiled the hell out of meat until I got it very concentrated. Then I lyophilized the residue, and then I did the potassium on that. And I had potassium. Then I gave that to the woman, and ever she had had 2 or 3 little cubes of this Bovril, which a homemade Bovril, you might say. She said, "I'm hungry, give me something to eat." And she started to eat and hold her food down. So that convinced me that the answer for many diseases is in this type of article by a chemist.
That must have been very gratifying to be able to identify that cause and to do something about it.
So I had a brother-in-law who gave me a Ruppert problem. He was dying of peritoneal sarcoma, in other words, he had so, and I remembered that, I think it was Windaus who said, who wrote an article saying that cancer cells tend to be acid. They're metabolizing very rapidly, and that if you could take advantage of that, you might be able to cure cancer, certain types of cancer. So I wrote an article which appeared doesn't matter what journal appeared,
yes,
in which I took younger son, my good son, had a setup down in Texas where he raised these mice which had no resistance to any disease, and you could inoculate them with any tumor, and he put the tumor under the skin and measured the amount that grew at the same time. Then I injected them with a chemical which would hybridize. In other words, I took the hydroxylamine. I chose hydroxylamine was a poison for cells. It was a mitogen, you might say. So I took hydroxylamine and made a hose here. And then there was another thing I had discovered, that the roots of trees were loaded with an amino acid called homoserine, which was serine with one extra carbon, and the other was not present in any protein. So I made the homoserine hydroxylic acid and inoculated the mice in whom we had put a peritoneal sarcoma, and cured the peritoneal sarcoma and killed all the mice. So I should have had a reprint of that, but I don't seem to have one here. But anyway, someone else might pick this up. But that's the job of the clinical chemist. You see, I wanted to make clear, the job of the clinical chemist is to help the physician find the cause of disease and to cure the disease, and find a cure for the disease.
How would you characterize your relationship with physicians, that is, personal interaction?
Well, I should have shown you some letters. My wife used to keep all the letters, and if I showed the letters to the AMA, they'd put me in jail practicing medicine. And many of the letters said, my patient was near death and was not surviving, and you pulled her out. How you did it with your chemistry, I don't know, but you did it, you see. And I have a number of letters like that.
So you had the feeling that the physicians really respected you?
They were. I was very popular in the school, in the place there. And when I just told them that I was going to leave, when I got a couple of these letters, somebody included a $25 check that was something to hang me, I sent the check back to him and told him that I'm not in the practice of medicine. But of course I really was. In other words, what I said, that practice of medicine should include clinical chemistry. And that's the message I'd like to leave with you. And you'll read that in the first article here. In this first article, Opportunities in Clinical Chemistry. Now what happened, now you'll see the people I had over there. You'll recognize Albert Cheney was the guy who set up an iodine message. Remember Cheney? Hugh McDonald, he became president of the air. Samuel Nelson, Arnold Osterberg, and Joseph Routh. All of these people, they lambasted me for saying that a clinical chemist could be a person who did not have a PhD. So I changed it. That was a changing point in my life, that I was inventing a new science, clinical chemistry, and that the definition of clinical chemistry should include the management of the patient. In other words, if you read in this book to see how you calculate out how much blood the patient needs, if you know the extracellular fluid volume and you know the weight of the patient, you can easily calculate out how much of a material you need to cure the patient. Well,
did you have
the title of this article, Opportunities in Clinical Chemistry, was good. And this was the article which you might say was the foundation stone of the clinical, at least what I consider the clinical chemist.
When did you have the feeling that the clinical chemist needed to be organized into an association?
I had that idea back when I was with Benjamin Kramer.
Did you have a major role in the organization of the American Association of Clinical Chemists?
I organized the thing. You see, these people all claim it. There were 9 people there, but the reason they were there was because I invited them.
I see.
And the person, I had to get someone in charge whom they would respect, so I put
Salvo?
What?
Sobel?
No, not Sobel.
Sobotka?
Sobotka, yeah. Uh-huh. He was, we held a meeting in his office, and he brought in his senior technician, who had written a little booklet on methodology, and that qualified her as a clinical chemist.
This was while you were at the Jewish Hospital in Brooklyn?
I was at the Jewish Hospital in Brooklyn, yes.
Yeah, when this took place. And you say there were nine people you gathered together for that organizational meeting?
I would say that there were nine people gathered together.
Do you remember any of them? Was Benjamin Kramer one of them?
What's that?
Was Benjamin Kramer one of the...
No, nine? Benjamin Kramer had become completely involved in his medicine and became very rich because a physician became my son. My rat face son makes $1 million a year. He's a neurosurgeon. Mm-hmm. And in order to get into his office, you have to pay him $100. And he collects about $5,000 for one surgical procedure.
So, who were some of the invitees that came to Sabatka's office? That
well, you have them. You've published them many times.
Oh.
There were some that turned me down.
Or who turned you down?
What's that?
Who turned you down?
I have to look back at my records.
Was Miriam Reimer one of the people who came? Miriam Reimer.
Reiner,
yes.
R-E-I-N-E-R.
Yeah.
She was a Bodka senior technician.
Oh, okay.
So she was there.
Okay.
Do you have a feeling for how many potential members of the Association of Clinical Chemists there were at the time that you had this organization?
Well, the battle went on a larger scale. It was me against the society, practically, once it was organized, because the society fell in the hands of Mort Schwartz and characters like that. And the United States government was confused, so they held a symposium in Washington on what is a clinical chemist. I got them to agree to that because I was down in Washington all the time with the National Aeronautics and Space Administration. So
in your position was that the clinical chemist was involved with patients and
my position was self-made. That was I made a clinical chemist who did what I, in other words, this one here, which says a clinical chemist who made rounds.
Yes.
And I felt that a clinical chemist should make rounds with a physician, go over each patient carefully and see if in any way chemistry can help and be qualified to help. For example, if you decide that the extracellular fluid of a patient is 20% of his blood volume, of his weight, and if he weighs 100 pounds, then you've got 20 pounds of fluid. And with 20 pounds of fluid, you have so much potassium or so much calcium or whatever it is to be added to the patient's body to bring him back to normal. So that it's not very difficult. You just have to know what it's about. But
You say that your position was in opposition to some of the other...
My position was in opposition to all of the whole organization.
What was the organization's position then?
The organization didn't have any position except that it was Get Nadelson. I was public enemy number one.
At what time in history, what year did that start evolving? Do you remember?
When
was this Get Nadelson policy or feeling starting to occur? It wasn't in your early days, was it?
Yes, it was right from the start, right from the beginning.
Oh.
It was...
You mean when
we held a meeting and I was invited to the meeting because they didn't know what I was stood for. Otherwise, they'd throw me out. This was a result of the first meeting.
Were you ever an officer in the American Association of
Chemical? No, I was head of the nominating committee for many years.
Well, did that enable you to make sure you...
I was doing the votes, but that's about all.
You were able to pick the people who ran the organization then?
Sometimes I could be, it was successful. One of the, I was a bad chooser. One was what's his name again? Oh, his son committed suicide.
Mm.
What was his name?
That's not helping me help you.
There were three people with me in the room. One was, the fat boy. Well, what was his name? My memory is beginning to fail me. I'm taking you.
What was the relationship of the AACC to other scientific organizations?
Well, every scientific organization looked at them with disrespect because they took such a meaningless position. If you read Sabatka's initial speech, most of that was material which I had told him. That his first speech as president of the society was that the chemist should involve himself more with the doctor and be involved in the treatment of the patient. And that is described in here.
Well, that was certainly your position, wasn't it?
It was my position right from the start.
And so when did you think that the AACC departed from that position?
I think that the biggest influence against my position was Mort Schwartz.
He was a clinical chemist. That was. Was he president of the organization?
No, he was. He was. Every time I would appear at a meeting with the government holding a hearing, he was there, and he had a collection of about five or six people with him who all voted against me. And I would use a standard argument that a nurse with 8 years experience doesn't make her a doctor. You see. I said a clinical chemist is a science like any other science, and I can show you in here.
Did you find a different attitude among the various members of AACC depending on their affiliation? That is, were the academics different from
I found that I was
private practice or different from
I was universally you see, sodium chloride and desoxycorticosterone needs in adrenal insufficiency in the infant determined by a correlation of chemical and clinical data. Now, I bring out very clearly that this adrenal immaturity may not involve the adrenal at all, and it turned out later that it did not. It involved the kidneys. You see, I've always wrote it with quotation marks. Adrenal maturity is a common finding in the premature infant. The immature infant. Well, a smaller infant is at a disadvantage in that the rate of water evaporation and heat loss is greater in proportion to body weight. The stomach capacity of the infant, even with it. I also introduced the plastic tubing, you know, you put down through the nose. I'd use it on dogs, and then I use it in infants.
Well, what do you perceive to be the significant contributions of the AACC to the field of clinical chemistry.
I feel that the contributions I suggested at the beginning in this little booklet are still the same. Get the data, measure the data, and see if you can find some chemical way of treating the disease.
Do you think that the American Association of Clinical Chemists has been particularly helpful to clinical chemists through the 50 years of the
field? No, it hasn't been helpful. It's been helpful in a financial way. Clinical chemists today are paid a little better than they used to be paid. But at the time that I got involved in it, they were not a housewife who could handle a frying pan became the clinical chemist. Do you remember when you were in the middle of that war that was going on? He was in the middle of the war. What happened was that a number of people on research grants were appointed to universities, and when money became tight and they eliminated these grants, then these people became supernumerary and they became unemployed. I sized them out, and somehow or other I found out who, and Myron was one of them, and hired him. And if you hired one of those, and the government would pay him the same salary that he got as a professor at the university if you taught him a new science. And that white book over there has one of his contributions in it. And I started that method of publishing monographs for the university. That Fundamentals of Clinical Chemistry was my assistant, whom I imported from Germany. His name was Haux, H-A-U-X, I believe.
Sam, when the American Association for Clinical Chemistry first started, way back in 1948, when you helped start it, what was the criteria for membership? Was there a limitation at all?
There was no limitation. Anybody who said he wanted to join could join.
Okay. So there was no requirement that you had to be a PhD?
No.
How did it differ such that...
There was no program in clinical chemistry for trained clinical chemists.
Yeah, until later on.
That came later.
Yeah. When, in the middle 70s, when the Chicago group decided to form the Academy, the National Academy of Clinical Biochemistry, what were the changes, or why did they form that compared to...
They formed that because under the influence of Mort Schwartz and his gang, that's what I refer to them as, they abolished, at least we got one concession from the clinical chemists, and that was the entitlement as fellow. If you had taken your boards and passed your boards and you had a PhD, you became a fellow. Well, Mort Schwartz succeeded in getting that abolished. And not only did he get it abolished, but he went down to Washington to debate with me against the clinical chemist having a PhD. Because the government was fair about this thing. They wanted to find out what the sixth prescription was about. And it was not only Mort Schwartz, but he had a whole gang of them. Some of them then became president of the society. And I was pushed aside as a fly in the ointment, you might say.